That was a pretty dire first half of the wrestling. Like that is a terrible first half of a wrestling show.
Folks, welcome to Who Booked This? I'm Stephen Graham.
I'm J.R. Goldberg.
And we're here to finish our discussion on the lovely King of the Ring 1995. If you listened last week, it wasn't a good start to a show.
Are you talking about our show or the show? Because either one's fair.
Either one's fair.
Yeah.
But on the second half, we've got Bret Hart versus Jerry Lawler. Okay. We got the finals of Savio Vega versus Mabel.
Yeah.
And we have the world champion in a tag match.
We have all those things. We have three matches that are, well, great on paper is the word, but better on paper than anything that we had in the first half of this pay-per-view.
Yeah, this second half. So I think this is basically where I stopped and then started watching again.
Yeah.
And this second half is a joy in comparison.
Oh, it's like an actual wrestling show.
Yeah. If they broke this show in half, man, would have been great. All right. So we got Bret Hart versus Jerry Lawler. They've been feuding for exactly 2 years because it started at King of Ring 93.
Yes.
And so to end all of this, they're going to have a match where the loser has to kiss the other one's foot.
Yeah. We could have, by the way, this match was not bad. Like I think this is a pretty good match, but we could have easily done an entire show on this match. Actually.
Probably.
Like I'm honestly shocked that no one had sent this in as a request.
I think it made my top 100 Bret Hart matches list.
Sure, that's fair. Yeah.
It's good. I like the feud.
It's a good feud. Can we also talk about Bret calling him Jerry the Slimeball Lawler? Like, I love Bret's, like, constantly lame trash talk.
He's like DDP with, like, Hollywood scum Hogan.
But, like, DDP, there's something like I don't know what it is. With DDP, I sort of buy DDP actually talking like that. Like, his regular life, like yeah. He thinks it's clever. Bret, like, I mean, I guess I buy Bret actually talking like that too, but it's so corny all the time.
It is.
Have I ever told you my story about meeting Bret?
No.
Okay. So I have a copy of Pat LaPrade's book on Montreal, the history of Montreal wrestling.
I had dinner with him once. He's a nice guy.
He's a very nice man. It is signed by like a huge percentage of people that are mentioned in that book that are still alive. Like Billy Two Rivers, a bunch of people. And Bret, had not signed it. So I went to an autograph signing that Bret was at, and I brought the book up to him. And I put it down in front of him. And Bret looks at the book and looks up at me. And he goes, "This book is bullshit." and I was like, okay. Like, you don't really know what to say in a situation like that. You're sort of like, all right, sure. Like, are you still going to sign it? Like, I would appreciate it. Like, Bret, instead of signing it where everybody else has signed it, he finds an entirely blank page and then writes in huge letters that take up the entire page. He writes, "Book of Lies," and then signs his name underneath and hands it back to me.
That is awesome.
It really is. Like, it's such a perfectly Bret story. And then, so afterwards, I DM'd Pat LaPrade about it. because I felt like I had to share it, right? Yeah. And Pat, of course, thought it was hilarious and said that the only portion of the book that Brett had read and what he was sort of referring to was a section on Davy Boy. Like, and Davy Boy was, and Brett was like, no, that's not how it went down. This book is terrible. And, like, didn't want to have anything to do with the rest of it.
I can see, like, Brett, if, like, something is incorrect,
yeah,
it, like, discredits the whole thing.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, why not?
I could also see Brett, like, seeing somebody else's perspective on an event that happened being factually incorrect, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. Memories, yeah, as we know,
are facts.
Are wrong.
All yeah, the they're time. Wrong all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Your memories that you think you have, 90% of them are lies.
Yeah.
They didn't That's like happen.
Scientifically proven.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's great, one of my favorite studies is they have everyone in a room and like something happens and then everyone writes down what happens, right?
Yeah.
And you have a bunch of different stories, like things so wildly different, like the color of the shirt, everything weirdly different. However, yeah, they do the same thing and they let the people talk amongst themselves for a bit before they write it down. Then everyone's story is the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
It's very weird. I wanted to talk about this promo.
Okay.
You brought it up. What the fuck was going on? Yeah, Brett's promo. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's going on with the camera? I almost threw up.
Yeah, it's like, I'm trying to think of like,
it so zooms like the in, it zooms like, out, it goes to the left, it goes to the right. It's just constantly being wiggled around.
And Brett is moving constantly too. He's like bobbing and weaving, like,
it's like they had, you know, those little jumpers that kids are in, like babies, and they jump all around all over the place. It's like they tied a camera to a baby's head that's in one of those and let him film this.
It is like that. It's like a very, it's like their first crack at like Crash TV and like extreme 90s promos, you know?
Yeah. Oh, boy. I really didn't like that. I felt sick to my stomach, but. Someone else could stick to their stomach because Jerry Lawler does his promo, I think, with Stephanie Wyatt, and she can't go near him because how bad his foot stinks.
Yeah. And then, of course, in pure Lawler fashion, he accuses her of being the one that is smelly. Despite the fact he has like cut a promo on this show about how smelly he is himself.
And that he did it purposely.
And that he did it on purpose to own the libs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he insults the crowd, of course.
He does? Yeah.
That's Jerry Lawler.
Yeah.
So I like the start of this where Brett is just like completely focused on kicking his ass.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The start of this is hilarious because like it starts how like an angry brawl should start where Brett is like trying to hit Jerry Lawler and like, Vince McMahon, instead of like understanding that and going with it, like Brett throws Lawler into the guardrail once. And Vince is like, whoa, that should be a disqualification.
Like, you imagine if that ended in a disqualification at that point?
Yeah. 30 seconds of the match. Paul Heyman's like, nope, that's it. Too violent, everybody.
This 2-year-long grudge cannot have such shenanigans.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so Lawler, though, I like how Lawler gets control eventually. He just gets lucky, basically. They're on the floor, and he just grabs Brett's tights, and he goes into the steps. Just lucky. And
Lawler's really good in this whole match. Like, Lawler's shape really works for this. Like, Lawler is so good at changing his facial expression to say not only things about the match, but about his own character. Like, Lawler, when he's like later in the match, I mean, still pretty early in the match, he does 3 pile drivers on Brett. Each time he does the pile driver and he comes up with this like giant grin on his face. Right? And then the crowd is like booing, right? And each time he reacts like, why are you booing? Like, he's so confused. And then he comes to the conclusion that they're booing because they want him to do another pile driver on that. It's so perfect of like, yeah. You can see the wheels turning for his character. Like, that's why he's so good. I also love Jerry Lawler doing his like hide the chain gimmick that he does all throughout Memphis with his fucking wrestling boot.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, he makes Earl Hebner look like such a buffoon.
I wrote down, Jerry Lawler uses the smell of his foot as an offensive weapon.
He does, yeah.
Oh, this is great. What's good here is when Brett makes his comeback, it's basically the exact same way that Lawler got on top. He got lucky and put him into the guardrail or into the ring post.
Yep.
Same thing. Nice symmetry there.
Yeah, nice symmetry. I wrote, you know, we always talk about Lawler's punch, but Brett has pretty good punches in this match. Brett has a great punch.
I love Brett's punch. Like, yeah. I think it's the best of the ones where they stomp.
Yes. Yeah, that's probably true. But like, I don't mind this. No, Chuck Palumbo's stomping punch is really good.
Oh, okay. Chuck
has good punches. But Brett has a great punch. And like his elbow punches when the guy's seated, like on the ground, are really good. Elbow punches, elbow strikes. The one Brett thing that I always hate, and like, I don't know why, it's like a wrestling pet peeve for me, in like a lot of matches, but like, I hate Brett's headbutt to the lower abdomen that he does.
Oh, yeah.
Because I hate when a wrestler has an established finisher and then they have another signature move that is set up the exact same way. Like, I hate when guys do a brainbuster as their finish, but then they always do a vertical suplex in the match, you know? Like, for whatever reason, it breaks the suspension of disbelief for me. So, like, I never buy why Brett doesn't just go for the sharpshooter there, you know?
As Gorilla Monsoon would say, he hasn't worn him down enough yet.
Yeah, but you can wear him down by trying the your finisher.
Yeah, it is odd. I always get confused when you're like, you're setting up for a move, and it's like, oh, your finisher? No, something else.
No, this other move that you always do. Yeah.
Yeah. So Hakushi and Shinja come around.
They do interfere in this match, yes.
But Brett ducks. And then he just kicks the ass of Jerry Lawler and makes him submit.
Yeah.
That's how you end a feud.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty cleanly won by Brett. I mean, Lawler is very giving. He's hoisted by his own petard, you know? Yeah. I mean, this match is the best match on the show by a pretty wide margin, right?
Oh, yeah. I think if it was on another show, like, people would actually, like, think of it fondly.
Yeah.
But because it's on such a shit show...
I think it also has, like, the stipulation is very weird, you know?
It is, yeah.
And quite horny, you know?
It's good, it set up long-term booking.
Yes.
So, first of all, Brett makes Lawler kiss his own he kisses Brett's foot. Actually, he just sticks his toe in his mouth, which is gross as fuck.
Yeah.
And then he makes Lawler kiss his own foot, which
had
to be painful.
Yes. Yeah.
This is great because now Lawler's mouth is so fucked up. He has to go to a dentist. And then he meets the evil dentist who becomes his sidekick.
It's true. Yeah. That's a good point.
It's good long-term booking.
Imagine the world of wrestling where you're like, oh, I need to look up a dentist. I'll go to this evil dentist who is also a wrestler.
I'll go to Isaac Yankum.
I'll go to Isaac Yankum. Yeah. So I have a working theory about this match that Bret Hart and Jerry Lawler needed some money on the side due to Vince McMahon's failing finances during the mid-90s. And, so they agreed to do a fan custom where the fan called for like a ton of like weird foot play, but they couldn't find an apartment to use So they just worked Vince into footing the bill and putting it on King of the Ring 1995.
That I like.
Yeah, that's my working theory right now. Can we also special call out to this being very, very porny of Bret Hart while Jerry Lawler, as he's walking away and almost vomiting, Vince McMahon says, "I wonder if Bret's toes tasted like chicken."
Yeah, what was that?
Yeah, that is gross, is what it was.
But like, what? Like, I don't understand it.
Yeah. I guess
everything tastes like chicken if you right. know what it tastes like.
I guess that's the joke. Yeah, I mean, like the 1990s had that like weird joke where like all like weird ethnic foods that people didn't want to try, like, you know, frog's legs and stuff, people are like, "Oh, it just tastes like chicken," you know? So it's probably a play on that, but who knows? I mean, it's just bizarre with, you know, no context whatsoever.
It was. Yeah, I heard that. It just it tweaked my ear for a moment, yeah. And I had to put it out of my mind.
Between Vince talking about the girth of Yokozuna like 500 times, and then now talking about this entire match, like, his commentary on this is hyper.
Yeah, it's like he's gone to commentary 101 and like he's so eager to try it out.
Like, so like, it's really funny because like they always make fun. Have you ever seen that? It was on YouTube for a while. It was like Michael Cole's mic feed during a commercial break.
Oh no.
So like it was during a commercial break of a WWE show, maybe like 10 years ago or something like that. And you only hear Michael Cole's side of the conversation. It's clear that Vince McMahon is yelling in his ear, you know? Mm-hmm. And you hear Michael Cole be like, Randy Orton is in the match. And you hear Michael Cole be like, "You want me to call him the Viper more? I've called him the Viper like 10 times already in this match." And there's just like 15 seconds of silence. And then you hear Michael Cole being like, "Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Of course, sir. No, I understand. Yeah, I'll say Viper more. I'll say Viper more." You know, just clearly getting reamed by Vince McMahon. And like, it's just such a this commentary, like Vince doing commentary here, and then like that just inform Vince so much of just like, know how to get something over? Talk about it constantly. Just mention it every 30 seconds. That's how you get it over, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
The big dog.
The big dog. Call him the big dog more. Talk about his yard more. Like, just say his yard. Just say the word yard, okay? Doesn't even have to make sense. Just yell yard over and over again.
Oh, boy. That's hilarious. So, we're at the finals.
Yeah. This show has flown by.
It took me like three times to watch it. boy. Okay. So,
all right, before we get to the finals, do I have my wrestling history wrong? Because I know that they had only done two like King of the Ring pay-per-views before, but Vince says Bret is the first ever King of the Ring. And that's just like preposterous, man. Right.
It's the first one of the televised ones.
Okay, right, because they didn't do the okay, I understand.
The other ones were house shows that they just did a King of the Ring on.
Yeah.
Okay. Which Bret won. He won it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So Bret, a two-time King of the Ring, is the first ever.
I think Don Morocco is the first King of the Ring.
Right. Because like there's multiple times where like major WrestleMania matches center around the King of the Ring. Like this, you know?
I think when Harley Race became the king, he did win the King of the Ring tournament. But they didn't really talk about him winning a tournament. They just started calling him the king.
Yeah, and then Junkyard Dog won it from him, right? And became the king.
No, he just he had a match with him and embarrassed him. Haku became the king next.
Oh, got it. Yeah.
It was Haku and then Duggan, then Savage.
Right. All right.
Which is a great lineage of a title.
That is. Can I say, too, like, I know that King of the Ring historically, like, ended up being disappointing, and the people that won it sort of very rarely capitalized on it, and the people who did capitalize it are more the exception than the rule. But, like, I love King of the Ring, and I think they should 100% bring it back.
Just love tournaments.
Yeah, and they have a freaking 500 hours of content to fill every week. Like,
and 500 wrestlers.
Right. You can't tell me that you can't do a King of the Ring once a year? Come on.
Do a 64-man tournament.
In March. Just do all of March.
Yeah. Do 32 on Raw, 32 on SmackDown, and then on the pay-per-view, the two people meet.
Oh, like, they could do so much with that. Like, if they did, like, one seeds versus 16 seeds,
yeah,
and Cruiserweight, a 16 seed who knocked somebody off, like, I mean,
yeah, you have an upset, like, you have the number 64, you know, fuck. At least we're getting the Mae Young Classic, so that's good. Tournaments.
Yeah, that'll be good. Yeah, I mean, I'll watch that. I watched it last year. I thought it was good. I think the field is better this year, too, right?
Oh, yeah, the field's great, and
yeah.
It's really the only thing I care about in the WWE right now is the women. So this tournament's pretty exciting.
They're way better booked than the guys.
They are. And they're better wrestlers. And I think I've been trying to think about why I've grown to, like, not give a shit about the men and care about the women. I think one of the factors is variety. Because, like, the women, some of them have different colored hair. Some of them have different body shape. Like, there's more variety than, like, the male roster, it feels like.
I can see that. I understand that. Yeah.
And plus, I feel like men are now working, like, 90s Joshi style.
Oh, yeah.
The women are working, like, 80s old school territory style, almost.
this is a big thing for me. The worst thing about modern WWE, like, the thing that really bothers me the most is that whether it's Vince or, you know, someone on the writing staff clearly feels that there is one style of face champion and one style of heel champion. And every time someone wins the title, their character immediately changes to be one of those two archetypes, right?
Yeah.
And the women are just given carte blanche to stay themselves in some way. Like, do you remember when, this is the perfect example. Like, do you remember when Kevin Owens, this is a good example, got really over by being, like, the like, prize hunter or, you know, prize fighter?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, like, always going for belts and whatever else. And then when he finally won the big belt, he just became, like, their regular heel champion, you know?
The sniveling coward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, Seth Rollins, or, like, there's a million other examples. Like, Jack Swagger was this, like, weird goof with, like, the Swagger Soaring Eagle, and then won the title and showed up in the, like, a suit like Jericho, you know? Like, literally the next night, he's like, no, I'm a different person now. It's so bizarre that they feel the need to do this. But with the women, they don't. Like, you know, Alexa Bliss wins the title. She's exactly the same as she was. You know, like, she gets to keep the character that got her over at the first, you know?
Nia Jax did not have to act like Alexa Bliss.
Right, exactly. Right?
Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we're at the finals.
We are.
Let's pick eight guys.
Okay.
Okay. So,
to make the best possible tournament for King of the Ring?
Yeah.
Is that our goal? Okay.
I'm thinking you have 1-2-3 kid.
Sure.
You have Hakushi.
Okay.
You have Owen.
Yeah.
You have Jarrett.
Okay.
You can have Shawn.
Fine.
You can have Taker, maybe?
Yes.
You have Luger?
Yes.
Who else? One more.
Pulling up the roster right now.
Yeah, me too. Wow.
So this is June 95?
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Davey Boy.
Davey Boy is a good pick. All right.
So that would be mine. That's way better.
Okay, here we go. Here's mine. All right. Owen is in it. Can we have Scott Hall in it, even though he's injured?
No, he's injured.
Okay, fine. So Owen is one.
Well, I have an idea.
1, 2, 3, kid. Yeah? What's your idea?
You make Brett versus Lawler first round match in the tournament.
Oh, okay. That's fine. Yeah, that works. Yeah. All right. Here's mine. Okay. Let's see. Oh, Chris Candido.
Oh, he was around. Okay.
He was around. Yeah. Waylon Mercy, 100%.
Yeah.
Is in my King of the Ring. 1, 2, 3, kid.
Yeah.
Luger. So that's 4.
Owen, you said earlier.
Owen, I said earlier. That's 5. Davey Boy is 6. Jean-Pierre Lafitte was on the roster.
Yeah.
PCO. Yeah. That's 7. Luke Williams, because I am a sheep herd.
I'll pick at the end, but I like it. So, well, all right. So that's options they had.
Yep.
But we got Savio and Mabel. Two people, like Savio just debuted, didn't he? Like the month before?
Yeah, I think so.
And like,
all right. So this is another question then. Obviously they were trying to get Savio over. If you were the WWF booking squad at the time and you were like, we need like a fiery underdog.
1, 2, 3 kid. Easily.
Yeah. Like the answer is 1, 2, 3 kid. Right?
Plus, like, you had Razor there. 1, 2, 3 kid was actually friends with Razor.
Yes. Literally, like,
and you were going to do the Razor kid split later on. You could have had like Razor accidentally cost him the finals.
Yeah, like, who knows? Yeah. You could have done literally anything, but no.
I'll tell you.
Like, Savio Vega is fine. Right?
Yeah, like, he's fine. I like him, but
he's okay. But like, 1, 2, 3 kid at this point is like a top 10 worker in the world.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah.
Oh man. So Kid versus Yoko, Kid versus Rhodey, Kid versus Mabel. That sounds better.
Yeah, I mean, that's much better. Like, I mean, that's 1,000 times better. What? I mean,
what? Why wasn't Kid in this?
Who knows? I don't know.
He showed up. Like, all these, this is what bothered
me. Literally, like, he got paid to be there. He showed up after the match is over.
So these are people who, I made a list here earlier. Okay,
yeah.
These are people who were on the show who didn't wrestle. You had 1, 2, 3 kid, you had Jeff Jarrett, you had Hakushi, and you had Owen.
Yeah.
Like those four would have made the tournament so much better.
So much better, yeah.
And they were just standing around in tuxes or interfering or being corner men.
Oh, man, I guess he got released the month before, but can I retroactively say that if I was in charge, I would have kept the gigolo Jimmy Del Rey around long enough to have him in my King of the Ring?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
All right. Liked when he showed up on Nitro as Jimmy Graffiti.
I love. No wrestler in history has looked sleazier than Jimmy Del Rey, and I'm here for it. I love it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Love Jimmy Del Rey. Okay, so I have a question.
Okay.
Did Razor being in Savio's corner help or hurt him?
I mean, Razor does nothing throughout the entire tournament, right? Like,
he does in this match, like, hit the mat to get the crowd going a little bit at one point.
I guess, yeah.
But, like,
I mean,
if you're in the crowd, like, I think part of the problem is if you're in the crowd and you're watching Savio Vega wrestle and you're just watching and you have Razor Ramon on the outside and you're like, why the fuck can't I just have Razor Ramon?
Yeah. And like the weirdest thing too is like when you're watching at home, Vince goes out of his way to say that he's medically cleared, just not for tournament action.
Well, he can't wrestle 3 times in one night.
Right. I guess. But like,
that's suicide.
Like, I don't know, like, it just seems so bogus, like, the if he's good, like, just let him try, right? Like, obviously I have no moral standard about these guys. I'm watching wrestling in the first place, right?
Yeah. Is Razor coming back from injury and doing three matches, isn't that equivalent to someone healthy doing four matches?
Sure. Yeah. Why not, right? I mean, I buy that.
Yeah. All right. So. Okay. So, yeah, my first note is no matter how dead a crowd is, they're going to count along if you do punches in the corner. So.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. They should bring that back. Like, how much better? And I'm not throwing this out there as like I legitimately feel this is true. The today's WWE product on Monday Night Raw and WWE Tuesday Night SmackDown, if you replaced every single suicide dive with a spot of the 10 punches in the corner, it would be a better show with more crowd interaction.
In theory, I agree with you. The problem is there's too many dives.
Yes.
And you'd be doing too many punches in the corner.
Right? There's a dive per match.
There's more than that.
Okay.
I think there's a dive per person. Okay, so there's a pay-per-view with 8 matches on it. I bet you there's 13 dives.
Yeah. So 130 punches in the corner. That sounds like a good night of wrestling.
If you replace half the dive with punches in the corner, I'm with you.
Yeah. I just don't understand, like, what is stopping, like, some undercard babyface from doing it? Like, why doesn't, like, No Way Jose do it or something like that, right? Yeah. Because, like, it would literally get him infinitely more over with the crowd than he actually is, yeah. Right? Yeah.
I agree.
I don't know.
It's a good spot, and it should be brought back.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Vince has gone into overdrive with his commentary in this match. It's basically like, Savio's an underdog, Savio's an underdog, Savio's an underdog, Savio's an underdog. Yeah. That's his commentary.
He also mentions Rocky like 500 times too.
Yeah, because Rocky's the ultimate underdog, and Savio's in Philadelphia where Rocky's from, and he's the ultimate underdog, just like Rocky was from Philadelphia.
That's if you just did that in the Vince voice, like, I would buy him saying that exact sequence of words, you know?
Yeah. So it was hard to listen to that part.
I just love, so like all right. So here, I'll read my note verbatim. I wrote, okay, final. I'm going to really pay attention to this. I typed that 2 minutes before an extended bear hug sequence.
Oh boy.
The whole story of this entire pay-per-view is that Savio Vega has wrestled more times in one night than anyone in the history of wrestling. And yet, Mabel is the one that is visibly tired in this match, despite the fact that he has only wrestled one match.
That's true. There was a lot of bear hugs.
All right, so I actually wrote, what percentage of this match do you think is bear hug related?
I'm going
60%.
At least. Yeah. At least. Yeah. Mabel just lays it in. And
yeah.
Boy, this crowd likes ECW instead.
Yeah. But the absolute best part, right, is the crowd starts chanting ECW. And Vince either doesn't know what ECW is or, like, just is enthused that something is happening and, like, can't stop himself. And the crowd is loudly chanting ECW. And Vince goes, listen to this crowd!
Oh, boy.
I mentioned this earlier in the first half of the show. But, like, it's really funny because this moment in wrestling history is talked about a ton as being, like, a turning point in wrestling where, like, ECW was put on the map as, like, a force to be reckoned with culturally because a crowd chanted for them as opposed to the wrestlers in the ring. And it's funny to me because literally that happens 3 times a week now in wrestling.
It's true. I call like, BS
show me a
on
Raw
that narrative.
Where they don't chant for someone who isn't there.
Yeah. I call BS on that narrative. by the way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a dumb narrative, but it is the pervading narrative, right?
It is, like, yeah. There's a lot of, like DX invasion churned around the Monday Night Wars and that kind of bullshit.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's all Vince McMahon revisionist history, but like, it's a funny narrative that people think about and like, you know, now it's just something that happens constantly. You know?
Yeah. Pretty much every show you're chanting for Punk. You're chanting. They still chant ECW over this.
Yeah.
Show.
They literally still chant ECW.
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically bear hug, bear hug, bear hug. Savio tries some shit and then he gets splashed, right?
Yeah. He loses to a splash. Yeah.
A good splash.
Yeah, it is a good splash. This match is a pretty nothing match. Yeah. I don't know.
It's like something you would just see on like an 80s house show.
Yeah, 100%. Like Savio doesn't even really get a hope spot. I mean, not really. No. He just sort of loses clean, you know. He doesn't lose because he's too tired or runs out of gas. He just loses the match. Like the worst part about this match is that like, they're clearly booking this whole show around a narrative, you know?
Yeah.
But then this match completely undercuts that narrative.
It's true.
I don't know. It's just bad. It's just a bad match.
Yeah.
But you can't say that they didn't try Mabel.
Yeah.
Because, like, they put Mabel over super hard, right? Like, he beats Undertaker. He takes out Savio Vega clean as a sheet in like 10 minutes, less than 10 minutes. Right? He beats the crap out of Razor Ramon.
And 1-2-3 Kid.
And then 1-2-3 Kid comes out and he beats the crap out of 1-2-3 Kid. Right?
He's hitting fucking splashes over, off like, the top rope. It's awesome.
Yeah. He basically goes over the entire babyface roster minus Brett in one night. Right.
Yeah.
Just like completely decimates them and then sits down on a throne, plays with a sword. While someone cuts a promo and they get booed a whole bunch, you know?
Yeah, I have some questions.
Okay.
So first, what would have happened if Savio won and had to put on that cape?
Cape they made specifically for Mabel?
Yeah, that cape for Mabel is like Mabel-sized. And if someone smaller tried to put that on, they would look so stupid.
Yeah. Can you imagine if they had done that during like the Twitter era and like people were just tweeting out pictures of the giant cape and be like, well, guess we figured it out, you know?
Yeah. So there's that. The other thing I don't like is the regal music, like the royalty music they use for Mabel.
Yeah.
Like he should have still been like his badass rap stuff.
Yeah. Man on a Mission. Yeah.
Yeah. Should have still been on a mission.
100%. I mean, although you could say that he completed the mission, I guess. If the mission was,
the mission was complete. Now they're just
mission
men.
Accomplished.
Now they're just men.
I put a note here that the King of the Ring should be allowed to use the sword they get in matches for the next calendar year.
Yeah. Why did he get a sword? Brett never got a sword.
Brett and Owen did not get swords.
They got scepters.
That out there.
Yeah, that was weird. And then Razor came out again. So,
yeah.
Yeah, big push. Diesel, or he's coming for Diesel. So
yep.
That's cool.
that's a threat if ever there was one.
Okay, yeah. So you're looking for a serious challenger for Diesel.
Yep.
Diesel's kind of beat everyone, and you need a big challenger for SummerSlam. Who are you picking on the roster to elevate?
I mean, obviously it's between Savio Vega and Mabel. Those are the only two options, I would say.
But like, what about like a Diesel Jarrett SummerSlam main event?
Or I guess the Jarrett was IC champ at the time, right? So they didn't have people who were title holders feuding all that much, you know?
Yeah. What about Owen? Oh, they did that later. No, they never did that.
They never did that.
Yeah.
You know, Owen really Owen always got booked really well for where he was on the card, but he never really got elevated like that, you know?
Yeah, just in 94 versus Brett.
Yeah. Yeah. Who else? But like, that's a different scenario, right? Yeah.
Who else? Boy. There wasn't much.
The roster is pretty dire.
There isn't much. You're looking at
There's like 40 people on the roster, and like half of them are just in bad tag teams.
Could Yoko have done it?
Yeah, I mean, like, Yoko probably could have feuded with Diesel, but like, I don't think that that match would have been much better.
No, it wouldn't have. Like, I mean, who else?
Again, my answer is Jimmy Del Rey.
Yeah, you might be right.
Yeah, it's Jimmy Del Rey.
You can't do Sean again. Diesel's coming, Davey Boy's coming up. Brett, you're holding off because you've done that a couple times.
Yeah. I mean, PCO is on the roster. It is Diesel versus PCO.
But they did that in Montreal, and then that's what like ended. that's what ended it, everything. So
yeah,
because Diesel was a jerk and didn't want to put over the Canadian in Canada. All right, what's next? We got one more match.
We've got the one big tag match.
But before, we have Jerry Lawler, one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen.
Just squeezing toothpaste into his mouth.
The Ralph. That's what got me. Ugh, that was so disgusting. Yeah. And just like drinking mouthwash. And he didn't even open up the floss. He just had it somewhere.
Oh, no, he didn't floss. Yeah, he didn't floss.
It was so gross. That puke, I really didn't like.
Yeah. Another, you know, I mean, again, more evidence to my this is the most fetish-friendly WWF show of all time. Just constant weird fetish shit happening on this show.
Yeah. Boy. Okay. Your main event of the evening. Man. Let's find some positives in this. We got Tatanka and Sid versus Diesel and Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yeah. You know what's really interesting? Like, I mean, and maybe this is completely rose-colored glasses, but, like, I sort of loved back in this pay-per-view era when, not a lot, but, like, some pay-per-views, the main event was just, like, four big wrestlers in a tag match, like, rather than, like, you know?
I like that, too, yeah. Not everything's got to be a big title match, right?
Right, and they have so many events now. Like, I would love if, like, you know, we sort of got it during the Shield era, I guess.
Yeah.
But like, I would love it now if like there was a pay-per-view main event that was just like Seth and Roman versus Dolph and Drew McIntyre or something like that, you know? Yeah. Like that would be really good, you know?
And like, yeah, and just build up to future matches. Like you don't need to do a singles match every pay-per-view between the two same people.
There should be main events and matches that are test balloons, you know? You have to test the waters, otherwise you tread water, you know?
Yeah. WWE's booking is weirdly, like, reverted back in time to, like, the 70s, where they would just do MSG. They'd do three straight matches for the title, you know, have a screwy finish in the first one, a screwy finish in the second one, and then the babyface wins the third.
Yep.
It's like they've gone back to that style that Vince Sr. used to do. It's very weird. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, and also, I mean, I don't know how much he does on the Gabe Sapolsky is working for them now, right? And like, you know, he was always a big fan of like, you know, putting title changes off as long as possible, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of very conservative bookers that are working for them right now.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. So
can we talk about
Diesel? Can we talk about Diesel's promo?
Can we talk about Sid's promo?
Okay. You go first.
All right. So Sid cuts this promo that like half of it is completely inaudible because he just whispers.
I love that about Sid.
Yeah. And then he just starts laughing at stuff, but he's been whispering, so you don't understand what he's laughing at.
And I love about Sid when he's laughing, he just closes his eyes like a maniac.
And then the best part is, like, when Sid starts laughing, DiBiase and Tatanka, like, join in awkwardly, like, they're just trying to humor him. And then Sid is talking about injuring Diesel, right? And injuring his elbow. And he says, I hear your elbow. I hear your elbow. I hear your soul.
Oh man. Sid is so fucking good.
Sid is great. All right. Like,
anyone who makes fun of Sid, like, shut up. Sid's awesome.
Doesn't like wrestling.
Yeah.
They like fake fighting, but they don't like wrestling. Yeah. You know?
Oh, I love Sid. All right. Anything else that talk about that one? That was just weird. But
That promo kicks ass. Yeah. The Diesel promo is also good.
Well, first you got Diesel calling Tatanka Pocahontas.
There's
some racist shit that we didn't need. Yeah. What?
Just like our current president. Maybe that's where he got it. Yeah. He was watching this Diesel program.
So Diesel is wearing jeans with a tucked in white t-shirt.
It's like a white turtleneck.
Yeah. It's a very bizarre look.
Yep. Terrible look.
Bam Bam's dressed like a human.
I mean, he's dressed like Bam Bam Bigelow. I don't know.
He's got a t-shirt like on. He kind of looks like what someone would actually be wearing. I don't know. I don't like tucking in shirts. I really hate it.
No, it's the worst.
My old boss, used to mention that to me about tucking my shirt. So I tuck in my shirt when he's there. Fucking sucks.
Yeah.
I hate it. The moment he leaves, I untuck my shirt.
Sure.
All right. So there's that. You got the racism. You got the weird outfit. That's all I had. Okay.
I wrote this note too. Like, I don't know. I mean, this can't possibly be true, but like, for whatever reason, I feel like Bam Bam Bigelow never got a lot of promo time compared to his place on the card, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
And so like, this is like one of the first times that I really remember like an extended Bam Bam Bigelow promo. You know?
Yeah. I think, was he doing some in ECW in like 97, 98 or whatever?
Probably. And I'm sure he did a bunch leading up to the LT stuff, you know?
Oh yeah, I bet so.
But I just can't remember any of them. But this promo isn't bad, you know? Like, it's weird that like, he's clearly a fine promo, but I can't remember any of his other promos, you know?
So we spoke about an outfit earlier.
Yes, we did.
What was Bam Bam Bigelow wearing to the ring?
The greatest outfit of all time.
This is amazing.
You talk about 90s Joshi. Like, this is something that Minami Toyota would 100% wear. Or like,
this is amazing.
Like a Akira Hakuto. Like, I mean, he comes out, it shoots fire.
Out of
like,
his wrist. I mean,
crazy. He literally. Yeah.
And it's got this fiery, like, collar. It's so good. Man,
his entrance gear is literally like just like this like leather fringed coat that has like flames shooting up beyond his head, like the collar is flames, like it is unreal.
So
it is, yeah.
Here's my question.
Yes, please.
So Bam Bam Bigelow, one of the most badass looks in the history of wrestling.
Yep.
He always looks fucking cool. He's got his, you know, his fire outfit.
Yep.
Badass guy, right?
Yep.
Turns baby face. And Vince thinks, we got to spruce him up. Like, that's not a baby face look. You need sparklers and collars.
Yeah. To be fair, Vince was right. This look kicks ass.
Like, he's like Buzz Lightyear.
It rules.
So bizarre.
I will say that, I mean, I do sort of feel like having like a wrist gauntlet that shoots fire is a much more heel thing than a face thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you should use it in a match, right?
Yep.
But.
So remember we talked about earlier about how, it was either last show or this show, about how a match can be like technically a good idea, but not be great.
Yeah. Is that this match? Is that what we're talking about?
That's this match again. Like, you have good psychology with working over Diesel's arm.
I actually wrote Sid is working the arm and Nash is limb selling. This is 100% gonna get written up by Segunda Kai.
What the fuck is this? I've never seen Sid like technical wrestle.
So here's my question. was Nash like actually hurt, and that's why they didn't do just like hot spots and stuff?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know either, and I don't really care, but I will say, so like,
what's bizarre, I will say too, this, about this injury, before you get to that, about this injury, right? They're talking about like how he's made this great comeback, and he's been out forever. He's back. It was last month.
Yeah. Right.
Like what?
Ridiculous. Like he was injured for so little time. He didn't have to relinquish the title during a time period where they actually took care of that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Sorry. This match has worked at a pretty fast pace, by the way.
Yeah.
I will say that.
Yeah.
Like this match has worked at a way faster pace than the Shawn Michaels match.
It was,
you know, or any other match on the card.
There is also three face and peril segments.
There are, and I like, so here's my big note on this match. And like, I'm, you know, you've been talking to me and doing this podcast with me long enough to know that I'm not, like a modern wrestling is innately superior guy. You know, like I don't agree with that, say, you know, people saying that it's just a strict improvement over old wrestling, but I will say there. I'm pretty steadfast in that belief. But I will say that aside from a few select teams like you know, the Midnights and the Rock and Roll Express and a few other people from the 80s, like tag team wrestling, I find from that time period in America sometimes pales in comparison to things now, because like now everyone in wrestling has a good hot tag. And like back then hot tags could like really, like no one figured out the formula, you know, like Curtis Axel has a really good hot tag. Titus O'Neil has a really good hot tag, but like Diesel comes in and gets hot tagged, and like it's just like there's no dynamics to the match. It just like feels the same pace. He just like does Diesel moves, you know?
Yeah, and he forgets to sell his arm every once in a while.
He does. Yeah.
So speaking of 80s tag team wrestling,
sure.
Okay, so there is two great tag team feuds in the 80s. One is the Jumping Bomb Anvils versus the Glamour Girls.
Uh-huh.
Fucking awesome, all of them.
Yep.
The other one is a three-part series. And people who haven't seen it in a long time or haven't really paid attention might dispute me on this, but go back and watch the three-part series. It's fucking great storytelling. The Brainbusters and Demolition.
Oh, yeah. Those matches rule.
Yeah. They're fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So go check those out. That's my recommendation.
I mean, there's a lot of great 80s tag match stuff. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that, like...
In the WWF, like, I was trying to keep it.
Yeah, in the WWF, for sure.
There's some good Hearts stuff, and Islanders and Strikeforce had a good feud, too. And I like Rufo's as heels, but...
I mean, it's later, but, like, you know, the Hart Foundation has good stuff, you know? I mean, that's not the 80s, but, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. But the problem I have with a lot of tag matches now is that that the rules seem to not apply. Like, anyone can go in and this change out. Like, they've gone to lucha tags all of a sudden.
Right.
But they don't say they've gone to lucha tags. So it's...
Yeah, the rules are sort of inconsistently applied. And there's, like, there's still, like... weird fetishism for some stuff. Like, they still in WWE now, like they still hold the tag rope a lot, and they still very clearly adhere to the only one pin attempt breakup rule for Matt. But like they like, you know, legal man is like completely ignored at this point, bizarrely, you know. So like you sort of can't have they have rule sets that are working in opposition to one another, you know?
Yeah. And the way I am, if I see something that doesn't make sense, I'm completely out. And whenever the non-legal man makes a pin, I'm out of that match, like right away. I have trouble.
And like, you know, it's interesting because I can buy it if it's referenced on commentary, like Jim Ross, for all his faults, was always really good about being like, this action is so fast paced. I think the ref has lost track of the legal man.
And that's fine, because like, fuck, if you watched hockey last year, the refs were horrible.
Right. Yeah. I mean, refs are like, I mean, it's a well-established fact that like wrestling refs have a tough job and they miss stuff all the time. Right. So like, if you reference it, ref missed it, I buy it, because like then there is some narrative use for that happening. It doesn't just appear to be sloppiness, you know?
Yeah. And then it's more realistic.
Right.
Because every other sport has referees fucking up.
Yeah. Constantly.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. All right, so what else happened? Diesel goes for an elbow drop.
Ah, yeah.
What an idiot.
Yeah, complete moron. At least, like, I sort of, you know, I mean, it's part of his regular offense, you know, so.
He just forgot.
He just forgot, right? He got too caught up in the moment. Yeah. I will say they, I love how mid-90s crowds were allowed to throw trash. Wrestlers, I think throwing trash adds so much. I wish that crowds were able to throw trash now.
Oh, some of those nitros and pay per views were insane.
Oh, right, yeah, the rings are just littered with trash. I mean, obviously, you know, everyone remembers the Hogan turn, obviously, had to like wade through it by the end. But like, there's some other ones with the NWO that are really, really good.
Yeah,
just. A constant barrage of cups getting thrown.
Yeah. It's good stuff. So Diesel, man, what did Bam Bam do in this match? He had like one hot
tag. Bam Bam did very little in this match. Yeah,
he was just sitting there on the outside cheering Diesel on pretty much.
I mean, he was like a face in peril for a long portion of it, which is hilarious when you think about it.
But Diesel but like face in peril is also hilarious. So
yeah, I mean, that's somehow worse, right? Yeah. But Bam Bam was probably miscast, but Diesel would have been miscast worse. Yeah. You know?
So what happens? Diesel hits the jackknife on Tatanka. He pulls him up at two, like a classic heel.
yeah. Big baby face move by Diesel there.
And then he wants to face Sid. He wants, he has the match won, but he wants Sid. But Sid walks away, and then, Diesel just pins Tatanka. Antichromatically.
Tatanka looks like a geek the entire time.
Yeah. And then we get fireworks.
Yeah, he did get fireworks.
As the victorious baby faces celebrate their epic win.
Can we talk about DiBiase, by the way, having like an all-time terrible manager night? Like, I think he's like 0-4 on this show.
DiBiase, the Million Dog Corporation, just, it didn't work. Like, in any way.
No,
which is so bizarre because, like, you know, it's fucking DiBiase who was a great promo and, he had like the money character. So there's so much you could do.
Yeah.
And he just got a bunch of geeks together and they lost a bunch.
They like constantly lost. It's weird because like DiBiase, like for someone who on paper should be perfect for a role like that. Like, I don't even think he was all that good as like the money backer of the NWO, you know?
He wasn't really.
Like, he should be way better at that stuff than he was.
I think
you know?
It's something like some people, they're very good at getting themselves over, but they don't know how to get anyone else over.
Right. Yeah.
It's like Wayne Gretzky was not a good hockey coach when he tried to coach one year. Because he knows, but he can't explain it to others, right?
Right. They say that about Bobby Eaton, too, where the things that he's good at come so naturally to him that he can't verbalize them and teach other people.
Yeah, yeah.
But so I understand that. It's weird. I thought about that for a bit after we watched this, because it's
cool. Yeah, I remember reading it somewhere. I have no idea where. It was some, you know, like wrestling role playing. It was a role playing game.
Mm-hmm.
And, the person had Ted DiBiase in the Million Dollar Corporation.
Uh-huh.
And he would like give all the money to Virgil, and Virgil was supposed to go out and get him this great talent. And then Virgil would come back with like Mantar or like Doink, and he would just get all these shit characters. And then DiBiase was just wasting his money on this shit team.
That's excellent.
That would have been really so much better than what they did.
Yeah, right. That he's like too lazy and egotistical to like go out and do the work himself, so he trusts it to Virgil because, yeah. Oh man, that's perfect. That's really good deep booking.
Yeah.
That's way more thought provoking than what they actually did.
Yeah.
To just make him look like a geek the whole time.
Yeah. So.
I you know what? Speaking of like this time period of wrestling,
I wasn't watching.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really either. But like going back and watching a lot of it now in WCW, I really love the York Foundation stuff.
Yeah,
like I think it's really really good, and I love the like the character that they have, the tailor-made man stuff, where Terry has the computer ringside that like puts out statistics that help him win the match. Like, that's maybe my favorite gimmick of all time. I think it's so hilarious.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Couldn't Ted DiBiase pay for a good computer?
Right. He should pay for some sabermetrics, you know? Oh, I mean, some advanced statistics to win the wrestling match.
Yeah. You know? Someone should do that now.
They should
fucking have a Moneyball character.
That, like, honestly, I mean, that's basically what Terry Runnels was in 1994. Yeah. She was ahead of her time.
She was.
But they should have a Moneyball character. Just like bring in some like bring in like Dave Prazak to be this like ugly nerd promo
who's finding all these inefficiencies in the WWE.
Yeah, right.
And then he has like one of the wrestlers just wins every match by like count out really quickly. Like,
yeah, right. Oh. There's like some bizarre thing. Like, how great would that be? I would love it.
Every match, it starts off, he throws him to the floor, just handcuffs him to the guardrail and goes back. Oh, this was an inefficiency in the WWE's rules. And
oh, man. Yeah, that would actually probably get over. Like, on like a mid-card level.
Yeah, you know? That'd be awesome. Yeah. But we didn't talk much about this show.
No, because it's very bad.
We're usually like a lot more positive.
Yeah, there's nothing. There's really not much to be positive about on this show, except for the Brett match, which is good.
I love the Brett match.
Yeah, I mean, like the sad part of this this show is that like a lot of the things that we watch on this podcast for this podcast are like things where someone's ambition fails, right? Like someone has an idea that is just too big for the world of wrestling, and like they try it and it fails. Yeah. And like, it's fun investigating where those failures happened.
Yeah.
This is just like a mediocre night of wrestling, right?
Well, this is a big fail. This is Vince McMahon feeling he needs a big challenger for his number one babyface.
Yeah.
And going all in on a guy.
Yeah.
And it just blowing up in his face.
Right. But like the way he went in on it, like even though he went in on it in like a very effective on paper fashion, you know, it's just there's nothing inherently interesting about it. I mean, this pay-per-view, and I know I say this a lot about the WCW shows that we watch, you know, from the mid to late 90s, where I think there's parallels to modern WWE. I think this show in some ways is very parallel to modern WWE in how obstinate the booking is, right?
When Vince like, gets his mindset to something.
Yeah, there's no changing it, right? And like, they didn't start chanting ECW because because ECW was new or whatever. Like, ECW was around and getting established, and like, the fans wanted that change, you know, in some way, you know?
Yeah. You know what?
What?
Let's have some fun next week.
Okay.
Let's do the Kennel from Hell. There's dogs.
There's dogs. I love dogs.
Me too. Yeah. I love my dog.
Yeah.
who disappeared halfway through the show. So
I'm sure they're around.
Yeah, she went to the fucking bedroom and laid on her bed, and that just to ignore me because she's a jerk. Then she'll come out here at like another hour or so.
Yeah,
because then she's like, okay, it's time where you go to bed, so I'm gonna go to the couch. Yeah, so that's fun. Yeah, so this Kennel from Hell match was suggested by Johnny Law on Twitter.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so
cool.
So
we can watch Kennel from Hell.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever actually seen it.
This is the Bossman Al Snow one,
yes.
Right? All right, yeah.
Oh.
I mean, we'll have to watch like the vignettes leading up to it too.
Yeah, because there's something where
doozy of a storyline.
There is with like we'll watch the stuff leading up to it and then watch that because I'm excited about there's like dog cruelty.
There's lots of dog cruelty. I mean, the match itself is probably dog cruelty.
Probably. But
we'll get to that next week.
Next week on what date is that? Oh, we're into October.
Yeah, next week. Good.
So that's fun. Yeah. All right. Well,
all right.
Thank you everyone for joining us. We're doing a proper ending this week. Thank you everyone for joining us. And tune in next week where we look at the Kennel from Hell.